Hi there, I'm Lewis Foster from the Manx Radio Newsroom. Thanks for choosing this edition of Newscast. Now, how about this for extraordinary? The musical Come From Away is currently being shown at the Gaiety Theatre in Douglas. And if you aren't familiar, this tells the true story of how the small town of Gander in Newfoundland welcomed around 7,000 stranded airline passengers after the events of 9/11. 38 planes were forced to land in the nearby airport following the attacks. And the musical tells the real-life stories of the locals who opened their homes, community halls, and lives to the passengers who found themselves there. Well, here at Manx Radio, we've been running a competition for listeners to win tickets to go and watch this. And on Friday, the person who won the tickets was a Mr. John Bevan. I'll let John explain why that was so remarkable.
Well, I was one of the 7,000 that were stranded in Gander.
When we heard about this, we knew we had to get John into the studio, and I was delighted, actually, to be joined on the day by Alex Toohey and Joe Hillard, both of whom are part of the cast of Come From Away. They're from Two Feathers Productions. They came up, and of course, naturally, they had questions for John himself. But first, I'll let John explain exactly what happened to him back in 2001.
On my way to Miami, the aeroplane I was on was due to refuel in Gander, so we were expected to stop in Gander. When we came to Gander, the plane circled the airfield. I'm looking down and I could count at least 20 planes there. So I'm thinking they must have a special offer on fuel in Gander. And I didn't expect to stay there for 4 days.
It is a remarkable story, isn't it? So you were there for 4 days in total, like you say, on your way down into the US. And what was that experience like? Can you sum up, you were on the plane for, was it 22 hours originally?
Yeah, well, 22 and a half hours.
You don't lose count at that stage, do you?
Definitely not. And what you have to bear in mind is that when you sat on that plane, we'd just gone over the halfway part in the journey when the event happened. So the plane just carried on to Gander. Like I said, when we circled Gander, I counted about 20 plus planes there. We landed. As soon as we landed, the police came around the plane, circled the plane. And it was only at that time that the pilot informed us actually what had happened. Now, you can't imagine what it is. We hadn't seen any pictures, nothing. It's just an event. But then we were waiting to get off the plane, and we waited, and we waited, and we waited. And, of course, the plane ran out of food, ran out of water. As soon as he mentioned, you know, so can you stop using the toilets or minimise the use of the toilets because the water's running out, most of the ladies just stood up and made a dash for the loo. There were some people on board that were desperate for a cigarette. They opened the door of the plane at the tail end of the plane, and within minutes, before they had time to finish the cigarette, the police were there, get that door closed. And it was about 7:30 in the morning. We'd left at 9 o'clock, left Manchester at 9 o'clock the previous day, but 7:30 in the morning, we then let off the plane. When we let off the plane, you go into the terminal, first ones to meet you, Salvation Army. Right, register here, name, address, next of kin. After that, right, if you want a bite to eat, you can go over there and have a bite to eat. And Kentucky Fried Chicken supplied everybody with a meal. And then after that, just like the play, the school bus comes along. And our flight was sent to St. Paul's Intermediate High School because they tried to keep all the passengers together. The crew went to somewhere else, but the passengers, they kept all together. So we were encamped in St. Paul's Intermediate. You walk in there, and in the gymnasium, you've got about 260 officers' camp beds, if you can just imagine that. Yeah. You then went to the assembly hall, and there was food laid out on tables there. And you could eat at that time all day. Meantime, in the assembly hall, they've projected the television onto the screens, and it's only then that you could see what had happened, and it's only then you realise how bad it was, you know, how extreme it was. Because we, like I said, the pilot had told us, but you just could not imagine it. You just could not imagine it.
What was that feeling like watching that?
It was unbelievable. You think, no, it's a movie stunt. You know, you could not believe it. It was everybody thinking, nah, it's just a stunt from a film. But it was real. Mm. You know, so that was then. Everybody expected to leave that afternoon. And as time went on, you suddenly realise we're not getting away from here. No one knew what the timescale would be like. All we knew was we were not getting away at that afternoon. Mm-hmm. So that evening, they sort of decided, right, now, instead of having food there for the whole time we'd been there, now we'll get a bit organised. So between 8 and 10, you can have breakfast. Between 12 and 2, you can have dinner. Between 6 and 8, you can have lunch between 12 and 2, dinner between 6 and 8. Mm. And then we were told not to go away or for more than an hour from our base, because if the flight was called, we had to be back within an hour. Yeah. What you have to bear in mind is that when we were let off the plane, you walked off as you were. No kisses, no hand luggage, as you were. Mm. So you arrive there, dressed in whatever you were dressed with on the flight. All of a sudden, you were staying there overnight. What do you do for a toothbrush? Toothpaste? Soap? So, in the school, they set up, I think it was the Red Cross that set up, took over one of the offices there. And they supplied underwear for the ladies, believe it or not. There's soap, toothpaste, towels, anything you could think of. And then, all of a sudden, we're there for a bit longer. So there's another room that opens up that provides you with a change of clothes. Mm. If you want a change of clothes. And that was the generosity, the people, they fed you I'll say every day for 4 days, they fed us. And they just, you know, they would come along with, in one instance I can recall, was somebody coming in with a venison stew that they'd made at home for 6 people, right? There's 260 people in the school, but they kept coming in with these little bits that fed all 260 people for 4 days. Mm. Yeah?
It's remarkable, isn't it? Just what the lengths they went to make sure people were comfortable during what was an extraordinary time. And we're joined in the studio by Alex and Joe. You've been part of the Come From Away production, and you've been sat there listening to John's story. What's it like?
Fascinating. And a real privilege to be able to meet you, but also to listen to your stories. It's one thing being able to perform this show, and whilst we know it's true, you know, to meet somebody who's lived it and breathed it, it's a real privilege to hear John's story.
It's really interesting to hear it from a person with a tie to the story, but not a tie to the show. Hmm. So last year I had the privilege of meeting Kevin Turf, who is one of the characters in the show, Kev T. And he, again, to hear his story from him directly was fascinating. But also, that has been a story that has been encapsulated now in a Broadway musical. Yeah. A lot of what is said in the show is taken from interviews, it is stuff that he said, but also the show has become part of his vocabulary. He retells his story. Mm-hmm. And it is his story, but he also tells it through the show, and he lives through the show. To hear it from someone who isn't kind of embodied by the show, but telling the same story and the same events, and it's just really interesting to hear it without the kind of the bias, if that makes sense.
Not
that
there's bias. You're getting some liner notes. Yeah, you're getting a wider view of this story and a bit more in depth as well. It must be really interesting with what you've learned so far and how engrossed you are in the story as it's put. And John, you went along to the show on Friday. What did you make of the Come From Away production?
Well, I certainly related to it. The events that were sort of shown in the show, there was one in particular that sticks to my mind, where the Walmart lady sort of invites a customer back to the house for a shower. Well, I can tell you that would have happened. It is not fiction. It didn't happen to me, but something similar happened to me when I was walking along the street. I was asked if I was stranded. Yes. Where are you staying? St. Paul's Intermediate. How many of you are there? 260. Goodness me. Come in, have a shower. And that happened. And then, after the shower, they offered us a bite to eat, which said, no, there's enough to eat up at the school. And before we left, they went into the freezer, picked out this big bag of meat and said, take that back to the school so they can do something there with it.
And again, just that generosity is remarkable, isn't it? And it's such an interesting story. And there are those comedic moments like you mentioned in there, but again, just extraordinary. And you've been there, you two have been writing down some questions. You want to pick John's brains, I can feel it.
Just going on from that. So how did you, watching the musical and watching these events that you could relate to, how did it make you feel watching this and then at the end of the show? Just fascinated to know what you think and how you felt.
Because the story you've literally just told us, that the story of from being on the plane to getting off to going to the school with the beds on the floor, being fed through the day, that is the first third of the show, literally plays out the exact story you've just told. Yeah, how did that feel watching that unfold?
Well, it takes me back 25 years, doesn't it? Because the the end bit as well, when we came to leave, we were in Walmart and it came over the tannoy, United Airlines flight, whatever the number was. Please make your way back to St. Paul's Intermediate. Your flight's due to depart within 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So you go to the doors, and outside the door, the locals were queuing up with their cars to take us back to St. Paul's. No one asked. They just, when we went out, they went out to get their cars. And the one that I jumped in was one of these big pickups. And I think there were six of us in the cab and six of us up in the back of it. Then we get to the airport and we're waiting now in the departure lounge. And the captain who was in there with us sort of says, "Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, but there's been a slight delay in our departure. I'll keep you in, as soon as I know, I'll let you know." Right. So about an hour later, we get onto the plane, and then after taking off, the captain comes on and said, "Sorry about that delay. The flight in front of us, Air France, they had a problem. Two of the passengers had false passports. One had a knife and one had drugs. So that flight has been diverted back to Paris." after spending 4 days in Gander, they're now being sent back to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Our flight carried on to Orlando, and as we're going past New York, we are shadowed by two jet fighters.
Wow, and they really?
Were, and I'm convinced that the pilot was waving to me when he said goodbye, when they left us. But yes, it's...
Wow.
How can I put it? It was very realistic, and I wonder if the ones who wrote the show were actually on the same flight as me.
That's how realistic it is.
That's how realistic it was to me. Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Isn't it? Just you're talking about like the security thing of you kind of on the plane with the jets and stuff shadowing you. What was it like when you landed in those 22 hours where you didn't have that much information, you'd been told a little bit about it, and then you were like getting off the plane, you were told you can't take anything with you. It must have been really confusing without knowing the kind of the full depths of why, because the context of that, for anyone listening who hasn't seen the show, who doesn't know fully the kind of story going on, is that each of the 30, there was 38 planes in total that landed in Gander, and because every plane in the air got grounded, nothing was allowed to fly, and every single plane and pretty much every person on them was treated as a threat, as a bomb threat, as a potential terrorist. They didn't know how many other planes were in the sky with people on them. So that's the reason that we've heard that they had to just leave everything as it was and just get off with only what they were wearing. But that must have been incredibly confusing in the situation scary.
Because also, this is 2001, six years before the first iPhone. So you've got no way of,
I was
no
thinking
medium
that you
to
can't
try
Google it.
Find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. And, it's must have been really strange.
Well, you get off, you were expecting to get back on. You sort of get off the flight as you were standing. You didn't think that you were going to be there for 4 days. All you knew was, right, you get off, there's been an incident, we'll sit there, they'll refuel, and we'll be off. And that was a thought.
Yeah.
Yeah? And when you mentioned no iPhones, I had a mobile phone at the time, but at that time of the at that time, there were only two bands in the mobile phones. One was Europe, one was America. So the Europe phone didn't work in America. So there was no means of communication.
And that, what amazes me, you mentioned before about the locals corralling with their cars ready to take people to the airport, gathering together. There was no Facebook, there was no online real community groups where people would just post like that. So that message would have been almost word of mouth, people on the landline phones ringing around their neighbours, and it again goes to show that generosity of spirit that they had there in Ganda as well. And it makes it all the more remarkable.
There's a lot of pictures and stuff They came, people who had landlines, who had any kind of computer, any kind of form of contact, they were coming and setting up in schools, in the airport, in like the street, if they could get power to it. They were setting them up everywhere for the comfort ways to find a way to contact back home and let them know that they were safe or get information.
I've got a question. So the scene in the bar where they're all being screeched in and having a bit of rum and kissing a fish. Did that ever happen to you? Did you ever, were you made an honorary Newfoundlander?
No, I did go to the bar.
Of course you did.
And I did play pool.
Okay.
But it was, how can I put it? Very subdued. Well, not subdued, right, but just a normal pub night out where you play pool against the locals,
nice.
You know. So it was nothing like that.
But of course that did happen, even if it didn't happen to John, it did happen.
another question I do have for you, it's slightly two-parter, and I know the answer to one part, because whilst we had to shut off air for just a minute, we carried on talking for a second. But I've had the pleasure of working with the show since kind of last year, before coming to the Isle of Man, and from a lot of people that I know who have worked on this show over the last 10, 12 years since it's been running across the world, everyone who works on it feels like it kind of changes them a little bit. They kind of get a little bit of Gander in them. And it just makes you kind of look at things a little bit more differently and just feel like you should do the right thing a lot of the time. My two-part question to you is, firstly, have you been back to Ganda? And secondly, has their generosity that they showed you changed you? Do you feel like you are now kind of more of a generous person because of what you experienced there? Or how has that experience changed you going forward?
Well, I haven't been back to Ganda. Has the experience changed me? The answer to that is definitely yes. I support a lot more charities now. I volunteer for hospice, so I do that twice a week, 2 days a week. I volunteer as a cruise welcome. I support Age Concern, I support the RNLI and Sight Matters. So it has changed me from that point of view, yes. I'm definitely more generous now.
It's fascinating. I could just sit and listen to you guys talk all day. It is really fascinating. And so just to go back to, obviously, John, you watched it that night and you've taken it away. What would you recommend for anyone who's thinking about going to see it?
Well, I would say go there and think about how, if you were stranded somewhere, and think of how you would like to be looked after, and see how the people of Ganda looked after people, then that's the way to take out from the production is to sort of say, if somebody came to me, I would look after them like the people of Ganda looked after them.
And Alex and Joe, how do you think you're going to approach your performances now, having met John?
Gosh, I think I mean, if they weren't heartfelt already, I know certainly this evening I'll be thinking of John, and the events of the months and the weeks that prior to this have certainly changed us anyway. As performers, we've heard lots of stories, and now meeting somebody from you know, one of the plain people, as we refer to them as well. I'm an emotional person, but I'm not too overly emotional. Joe will testify to that. But it's certainly, yeah, it's just something that, you know, it's very close to all of our hearts, and I will, yeah, certainly be thinking of John tonight.
Mm. It's quite an incredible show. It's not just a kind of jazz hands musical that you'd like. It's not what you'd think of most of the time if you go see a musical. It is quite a powerful piece. It's about, you would have said this a few weeks ago, care, compassion, community, everything you've heard from John today. And one of the questions that gets asked in the show by Kevin Turf, and he asks this, he says it quite a lot in real life, especially with a lot of what's going on in the world at the moment, and especially if you look kind of across the water, of that, would this have happened back home? Would the people have done this? Yeah. And that question is what kind of changed him. From what you've said, it's the same kind of thing that's changed you, and from a lot of people who do the show, what's changed them. And I feel like what's so powerful about it is being on the Isle of Man, doing it here, a community that is so similar. It is island community, island life breeds a different type of person. It creates people who are slightly more compassionate, more kind of caring, and it's that community feel. So to be doing the show on an island and having that kind of person in the audience, I think it really, really relates. So to have someone like yourself who's not just living on this island and gets to live that island community day after day, but to have that story told as well is just, it's really, it gives you more responsibility in telling the story. It's not just a hobby. Yeah. It's, yeah.
And the fact that it's, no, it's, as John has just said, no, that it's all true and he relates to all of it. It's not just a story about kindness. When you watch it, you think, wow, this all actually happened, and to that level of kindness and humanity, and at the worst of times in the history of the world, you know, it can't help but move you as an individual when you watch it. And I defy anybody watching it to leave the theatre not wanting to be a better human being in themselves than they already are. I think, you know, the experience that you lived through has clearly changed you. The experience of performing in the musical changes you. And I think as an audience member, it will change you. Mm-hmm. And I just think this is a musical that needs to be seen by this island. It's mm-hmm. for this island. Everyone can relate. And a
slight perk for John is that he can go around telling the island now that there is a musical about him being performed at the Gaiety, a retelling of his life. That's a nice little flex for him as he tells his friends.
Starring John Bevan. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds to me like the story itself is in very safe hands with you two, Alex and Joe. You can tell how much you care about it. John, is there anything you'd like to say to Alex and Joe here?
Well, it's just a case of keeping up the good work.
Thank you. And I must say, we've got a fantastic cast around us as well. You know, I'm not going to name them all because I'll forget somebody. I will forget somebody. But they're all fantastic. And, you know, we've all got a huge responsibility. And, we can't wait to get back on that stage.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.